Happy New Year from us at Dinner Table Talks. We are at the dinner table, and I am Joe Hilliard, and of course with me,
Aislinn Campbell.
And we're recording this on New Year's Day, just like we recorded last week's episode, the day after Christmas. So
Happy New Year!
Exactly. We want to tell you about the amazing meal we shared together as a complete family for the first time during the holidays, which was great. And we've got so many unanswered questions, so buckle up, grab a beverage. Let's get into it.
Yes, so much fun. I am very excited to talk about kind of what some of our intentions are for 2021 and things that are coming and the excitement of the new year and goodbye to the old year because it was a
doozy.
Yeah, it was. As I've been going through the last 10 days of 2020, someone introduced the concept to me, one of the coaches I follow, of finishing strong.
Yeah.
And I really liked that because I think that sometimes, especially when we talk about the gap week between Christmas and New Year's, and then if you think about the last days of a year that were a very different year than everyone expected, I thought it was a really good concept and it helped me. But it had me paying more attention to how folks leave a year and move into the new year. I didn't want to get into that place of saying like, good riddance, it was such a terrible year. I can't wait for you to be over with, because I think that every year could potentially be someone's worst year and best year. What I wanted to do was to focus on the things that made 2020 the best year.
You recited an inventory of great things that happened in our family and for you and me, 2020, the other day.
A review and reflect.
And you said something last week that stuck with me, was that I'm not going to let my experience be defined by others' experiences. Yeah. And when you were reading that list, gosh, some amazing things happened in 2020. And as you and I tee up for the next year, I expect a ton more amazing things.
Yeah, I think that I came to the understanding at this point that 2020 was exactly what it was intended to be. 2020, we have got to see what our priorities are. We have got to recognize what we value, what is the most important thing, and that we have to focus on self-care, taking care of our own person, and also taking care of each moment, that every moment, the present moment, is the most important thing as we move forward. And what I expect for 2021 is that 2021 will expect us to take action on what we learned in 2020.
And certainly not wait for 21 to somehow lay itself out for you.
I think 2021 is going to be a bad year if you expect 2021 to lay it out perfectly.
Well, I mean,
for
people
you
scratch their heads and say, I wonder what 2021 is going to be like. No. What are you going to make of your 2021?
Yeah. Simple. And that has us setting the intentions for ourselves, for our household, for our family, for the podcast.
Since you and I met and coupled, we have shared dozens of creative pursuits.
Yeah. It's our thing.
And here at J-Hack Studios, or Dinner Table Talk Central, or The Office. We've been hard at work.
Yep.
You've got some stuff coming up.
By the time you hear this, you will actually have to listen to the recording of a live masterclass that I'm going to be doing online about intuitive gardening. But if you are interested, go ahead and check out that recording, because today I officially start the 6-week mastermind series of intuitive gardening. And you can sign up for that today if you're interested.
No matter where you live.
No matter where you live. It's not a regional gardening workshop series. Intuitive gardening is my superpower, and I want to share my magic with you. So let us know if you are interested in getting more information on that, and we will drop the link so that you can sign up for the class. We'll drop the link so that you can see the recorded free masterclass that I actually did on January the 2nd. So check that out and definitely go over and check out the new website.
It's not officially launched. Maybe people shouldn't go to aislinncampbell.com right now and see what we've been up to.
They should totally go and check it out.
Oh, they should?
Yes. Okay. Joe has spent a lot of time here at the end of the year really getting all of this stuff ready for me to do these big, massive launches and to
kick off some new products. It's been a creative joy to get creative with you again. Well, I'm excited for what you're up to.
Yes, yes, yes. So much coming. And for those of you that live in our local area, stay tuned because I do have some local hands-on gardening memberships, garden clubs that you can get involved in, some things that are going to be happening at the farm with cooking club demos and some farm-to-table supper clubs. That's all for our local folks. But those of you that are not local know that I am constantly doing all kinds of now online education that is appropriate for anywhere you live, for anyone, and for folks that are really wanting to live that My Garden is a Sanctuary lifestyle.
Ooh. Unanswered questions.
A lot of unanswered questions this week, more than usual.
Good, I like them. They're one of my favorite things because it gives us the ability to like preach and talk and tell you all the things we think we know and then go, wait, hold on, maybe we need to do a little bit of research on that and learn a little bit more about it
we'll pontificate wildly with no knowledge whatsoever, right. And we'll come back next week and fill in the gaps.
Kind of sounds like a pretty typical American, by the way.
You tasked me with the first one. You wanted to know, what was it, more about celebrations,
holidays, celebrations, things that people are celebrating?
We mentioned a couple of them last week. Kwanzaa, it's an annual celebration of African American culture that's held from December 26th to January 1st. And it culminates in a communal feast called, and I might not get all these pronunciations correct, Karamu, usually held on the sixth day. Now, it was created back in the 60s. The first one was in 1966, mm-hmm. designed to accent seven principles by which Kwanzaa was celebrated.
Okay, I like that. Yeah. I like that.
Now, we talked about Boxing Day last week. It originated in the UK and is celebrated in a number of countries that previously formed part of the British Empire.
Okay.
And on Christmas Day, those that had been colonized, creating a caste system of upper and lower, had to work on Christmas. Mm-hmm. But on the next day was Boxing Day. And boxing comes from, the word boxing comes from how the owners, the British colonists, would give their servants a box, a Christmas box.
So the lords and the ladies have already celebrated their actual holiday. So now they're giving the servants the, a box of goodies?
It was a box of food, money. It's kind of evolved into like a day of tipping, monetary gifts for those, you know, around you. Oh. But it is a holiday in the UK still.
So it kind of sounds like a Labor Day during the Christmas holidays.
Sure, yeah. Hanukkah, we know a little bit more about. Jewish festival commemorating the recovery of Jerusalem and subsequent rededication of the Second Temple. And it's also known as the Festival of Lights. And this festival is observed by lighting candles on a menorah with nine branches or candles. One branch is typically placed above the others, and its candle is used to light the other eight candles. So that's when you're going to see traditional Hanukkah festivities, playing the game of dreidel, eating oil-based food such as latkes. And interestingly, in the Jewish faith, it's a pretty minor holiday, but has gained ascendance of knowledge because of its closeness to Christmas.
I love getting to know how other folks in the world celebrate things.
I got a few more.
Mm-hmm.
Keep going.
Yes.
Diwali. Otherwise known as the Festival of Lights, Diwali is a holiday of Hindu origin and is widely celebrated throughout India. It's a five-day event, which falls in October or November. Folks will light clay lamps, said to represent the destruction of anything negative in one's life.
You know what I'm hearing when I hear you describe all of these specific things that we're all, the whole entire planet Earth, is celebrating during this time of the year?
That while we may have differences of religion or origin of celebration, that all of these celebrations could probably touch everyone's life in a meaningful way if they got past their initial fear of something different. But what is wrong with what I just read?
It's that they all come from the same base. Sure. They all come from and celebrate the exact same thing. And it is light, energy, fire, life, divine light. It's all the same. It's all the same, just coming from different cultures.
I could go on and on. One more I could talk about.
Okay.
The Lohri Festival, L-O-H-R-I, is celebrated in northern India each year on January 13th and marks the end of winter when the sun changes its course.
Light. Divine.
We sat in the backyard a week ago, you and I, with a fire, watching the big conjunction event when Saturn and Jupiter were really close and created the Bethlehem Star, some called it.
Light. Energy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those are my favorite ones these days because those are the ones that all of our ancestors would have celebrated, because with no internet, television, telephone, communication, newspapers, any kind of media, the stars, the heavens, were your television set.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know the origin of the Christmas stocking.
Oh, yeah.
And it's thought to originate in the life of Saint Nicholas. Now, there's no written records of the origin of the Christmas stocking, but there's a bunch of popular legends that are kind of oral tradition. One of them is that a poor man with some daughters did not have the funds available to dowry his daughters correctly. Saint Nicholas wanted to help, but he knew that that older man would not accept charity. So after dark, he threw 3 bags of gold through an open window at their home, and one of them landed in a stocking.
So the stockings that were hung over the fireplace
to dry. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah.
But this led to the custom of children hanging stockings to get gifts from Saint Nicholas.
Uh-huh. I love stockings. I really do. That's like my favorite thing to open, oddly. And it's funny because it's just such little trinkets, you know? All right. What else you got over there?
At Christmas brunch, me and your brother began building, constructing Bloody Marys, adding this and that and everything to see what we could do. It got me thinking, what is required for this beverage to be called a Bloody Mary?
Can you make me a Bloody Mary right now?
I know, right?
I want one really bad.
I can't. I don't have these ingredients. Now, the Wikipedia entry for Bloody Mary says that the critical ingredients that we started with last week, vodka and tomato juice, we had that, right? We're there.
Mm-hmm.
But the drink almost never consists of just those two things. And what you're going to see commonly are things like salt or celery salt, we used, cracked pepper, hot sauce, like a Tabasco kind of thing, citrus juice, Worcestershire sauce.
Worcestershire?
Yeah. Clam juice sometimes, olive brine sometimes, brown sugar, molasses, bitters. All of these ingredients can make up a Bloody Mary.
I want a pickle pop in mine.
Interestingly, 99% of people are going to say that Worcestershire sauce is a critical ingredient for a Bloody Mary, which makes it not vegan. I did not know this. Do you know why?
I can't remember.
Worcestershire sauce commonly should contain, to make it real, anchovy.
Okay, that makes sense. I knew there was something like a fish. I couldn't remember. Kind of like we use the Clamato sauce. It's
now
got
that's,
clam
I've
juice.
I've used Worcestershire sauce, and I've seen those paper wrapped Lee and Perrins, you know, in my refrigerator since I was a kid.
Right.
And we always have Worcestershire sauce around.
Yes.
So I went over there to check out, look at the back of the bottle, and indeed, anchovies.
In case you were wondering.
So then I went to food.com just to look up Bloody Mary from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
In a blender, combine tomato juice, lemon juice, lime juice, horseradish, Worcestershire sauce, garlic powder, pickle juice, hot sauce, and process until that's smooth. Basically, you're making from scratch alternative of the Bloody Mary mix that you buy at the grocery store.
I think you should make me that right now.
And then you pour that with your vodka. Then you garnish it with your favorite vegetables, pickles, celery. We talked about that last
week.
Pickle
pops.
How we've gone to get some crazy Bloody Marys in our life together, and those are always fun.
Speaking of crazy Bloody Marys, I actually did get one of those yesterday.
Now tell me this story, because it was like 40 degrees here. I couldn't imagine you on the deck of an outdoor beautiful restaurant sipping a cold Bloody Mary. What'd you do?
So my friend Deidre, who I've mentioned before, she is actually the gal that does my amazing hair. And she had gone on to my, I've mentioned this before, I have an online farm stand called Aislinn's Overflow of Abundance. For my local folks, if you want to buy local fresh produce and artisan crafted foods from me and my family on the farm, we've got it there available for you. Let us know you're interested and we'll give you the link to that. And so when she had ordered this big order and had asked me if I would deliver it to her, and I can do that with a little bit of a cost, you know, most of the time, I said, absolutely, but when I get there, you got a hot toddy for me, right? And she goes, I got a house full of kids. And I said, okay, let's do something else. Let's go somewhere. Let's meet up. Hey, for you local folks, Docs. We had this like fishbowl size globe of Bloody Mary that had shrimp in it, and it had a skewer stick with some kind of candied bacon something or another in on it, a skewer stick with all these pickled things, pickled okra, pickled peppers, all this great delicious stuff all shoved in this delicious Bloody Mary, and it was a perfect little treat. We were all bundled up, and I enjoyed it very much, and it was a great New Year's Eve.
You kicked your New Year's Eve off with a big fat Bloody Mary.
I did.
I've got one more unanswered question, another one that you tasked me with. We've talked about wild hog population in Texas.
Yes.
Wild pigs, feral hogs, razorbacks, boars. But regardless of what you call them, they are a huge issue in the United States and across Texas. It is estimated that there are more than 5 million wild hogs in the United States. And Texas is home to more than 1.5 million of them, and they can be found in 99% of Texas's 254 counties.
Wasn't it at the very beginning of this COVID year when things got real quiet downtown that someone actually saw wild hogs yes. running through downtown Corpus Christi?
Yeah, that's when the pictures were coming out around the world of when human
slows
interaction
down.
With nature stops.
Uh-huh.
Lakes were clearing up.
Right.
Like immediately. But yeah. At the beginning of COVID, you'll remember when everyone was locked down before it become politicized, flattened the curve at the very beginning, all of that. Wild hogs were running through downtown Corpus Christi. And they were
That's
being
cool.
cited often.
Yeah.
And the uneducated population, I don't mean that in any derogatory way, because right. most people don't know what I'm about to tell you about.
Right.
We're like, oh, that's cute. One or two hogs must have gotten out of someone's farm. No. This is an invasive species. And when the humans are taken out of the equation, hogs would literally take over our state.
Right.
So why are there so many of them? They didn't evolve here. There's no natural predators to speak of.
Except us.
And then a single sow can have 2 litters of 4 to 8 piglets in a year, which, you know, compounds the population problem.
Right.
Now, as the first settlers began to colonize Texas, a lot of them brought pigs with them as a food source. And it wasn't uncommon to allow those livestock to roam freely on your land. You know, so that means that all the piggies didn't find their way home, right? Mm-hmm. They went off and created lives for themselves. And then in the 30s, the Eurasian wild boar were bred and released into Texas. This is the, like when humans think they're smart.
Mm-hmm.
For hunting.
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough pigs to hunt. Let's mm-hmm. introduce new breeds from around the world. Now, here's the thing. Our boys go to A&M, and well-known around the world as being an agricultural research center.
Texas A&M University. There are other A&Ms in the country, by the way.
Okay, yeah, you're right. According to Texas, you're right, A&M study, they cause an estimated $52 million of damage every year, damaging land, crops, wildlife, contaminating water sources. But what we've talked about on the show a couple of times is how they spread disease, such as swine, brucellosis.
I'm not even going to try it.
Foot and mouth disease.
Brucellosis.
There you go. Yeah. Bubonic plague, intestinal worms.
Well, and if you go back to that, this particular animal carries these types of parasites and things like that, is the reason why you have always been trained as a chef or a cook, a home cook or mom, dad, whatever, that you have got to cook that meat completely done, mm-hmm. as opposed to like beef that we can eat rare or medium rare or whatever. Pork has to be everything cooked out of it that you don't want in it. And that can actually explain why there are some religious traditions that don't eat pork at all.
Right.
Because back in the days before they understood how to control the concerns that were coming out of pork, that was how they helped control the population getting sick, was by saying, listen, we're just going to decide that pork is not something we eat as a culture, as a religion, as a...
Do you remember at the front of COVID, I think you made the point that our government is too large and unwieldy to be able to be nimble enough to quickly head something off.
Yes.
So is the case when it comes to wild hogs. Because of all the differences of opinion about what is mm-hmm. ethical and humane and right, mm-hmm. Texas has never created a statewide control thing.
Got it.
And they rely on hunters to help. And it right. is estimated that in Texas, 30% of the feral wild hog boar population is killed to harvest for meat every year. The current estimates are that that number needs to be 70% mm-hmm. to keep things really under control.
It's no getting... matter their age, you can trap them.
And some yeah. ranchers get so frustrated with these animals that they do resort to the chemical euthanization that we talked about, which is illegal in Texas, by the way. We're getting very specific to Texas, aren't we?
We are.
Okay.
Shall
we move on?
We shall.
So you show up drunk out of your mind from your huge globe of Bloody Mary.
Shut up. Oh, I did not.
Okay. If we think back in the future to 2020's Christmas, what did I say last week? I was bummed that my kids weren't there.
Yeah.
Well, my son comes back home a few days ago.
Uh-huh.
But my daughter flies in on New Year's Eve.
Yes.
So we
and all, my kids are still here.
So we congregate at our home for the first time, all of J-Hack together. And it really was like an immediate, positive, amazing vibe.
I love when all the kids get together. You might think in a family, in a blended family, like Carol and the Brady. What were the Brady parents' names?
I'm not going to answer that for you.
Please
if you
help
don't
me.
Know that.
Carol and Greg.
Greg is a son. Carol and
Bob. Robert.
Starts with an M.
Michael.
Mike.
Carol and Mike.
Come on.
Okay. You might think that Carol and Mike were the center of the Brady Bunch, but they were not.
Alice was the center of the Brady Bunch. I watched that intro thousands of times.
So what we need is a live-in housekeeper.
Oh, God.
God, wouldn't that be nice?
We're setting intentions
yes,
for 2021.
Yes, we are. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Currently, her name is Joe.
Hey, that's not fair. Anyways, in the J-Hack household, the babes are the center. The babes are the ones that have made the J-Hack family.
The babes, all four, or the two daughters?
Our four together have created their family dynamic. And when they don't have Christmas together, everyone in the little J-Hack family dynamic feels it.
Yeah.
And so it was a really fun night to get together
with
our kids.
I'll take that envelope of cash that you're giving me for a Christmas present, but I really don't like it because the other ones aren't here. Is nothing that any of the kids said.
No, but they want to be together. They love each other. They miss each other. They enjoy each other's company. They love our Christmas tradition that we set out years ago, really with the concept of we understand you guys are all growing up together and someday you're going to not want to have to buy presents for it's going to get too complicated because there's so many of us.
Oh, we're doing 1-5-10 until someone dies.
I hope we do 1-5-10 just until, we've started a tradition, which,
until
by the way,
until their kids are doing 1-5-10.
1-5-10 became an inflation, and so now it's 5-10-15,
well,
and we even talked
a little
about
money.
Last night that it might go up a little more once they've all graduated from college, so that, they're
and we've talked
when
about
they're all bringing home the big incomes, because we have, supermodels living in our house, and we have finance income
geniuses,
and
media moguls.
We have media moguls, and we have amazing, awesome
and
kids
live-in housekeepers.
Doing, all that.
Okay, so 1-5-10, we talked about it last year, is a gift exchange that just the six of us do, you, I, and our four kids, and you draw a name, and you have to buy three gifts for them. It used to be $1, $5, $10, now it's $5, $10, $15.
Yeah, and the idea has always been get creative.
Get creative.
You don't have to buy something just because someone wants it. Get creative about what you give.
Make a splash if you can.
Yeah.
So the convergence of all of us led directly into that because my daughter, away, knew that she was going to either A, miss out.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to do it with FaceTime, but you're not in the room with us. And she was strictly against this. I want all of us in the room. So we were able, again, we had a 7-hour window to get all of us in the room. So when we did, we went straight to 1-5-10. Your son drew me. I was getting gifts from your son.
Uh-huh.
You got gifts from me.
I did.
Your son, his 15.
It was funny and good.
Was a 12-pack of beer
that
I had seen at the grocery store that I knew cost $14.99.
Uh-huh.
And he was 21 years old and could buy it. And
yeah.
Your mom, no, you bought this, big boy.
He did.
That was fantastic, and I can't wait to begin enjoying it.
I thought the best part of it was that the first thing in the gift before he brought out the actual gift was a can of Four Locos.
Four Loco, which is going to be premiered and drank and talked about on my other podcast, Beer in a Movie, which you should
check out. You should totally check it out. I really, really loved the gifts that the 1-5-10 that you gave me. One of my gifts was a coffee mug. I'm sitting here drinking out of it right now. And his theme for my gifts this year was using my brand.
Using your logo.
And many of you guys maybe haven't seen my brand yet, but I really love it. It's the same brand I've used since I ran for mayor, and it's my brand. So right now I'm just drinking a nice hot cup of coffee. Actually, it's a nice cold cup of coffee. Could you fill it up for me?
I will.
Warm it up for me?
Out of your It's Just Aislinn branded mug.
Yes.
Which is gorgeous. It came out really well. I was excited.
We knew we had the kids for a very short window because it's New Year's Eve and my son's flying out to a bowl game to Florida today and your daughter hadn't gotten to see her friends because she's been gone the whole holiday season. And my daughter had made plans to be out on the island with her friends in a little beach house out there and all the things, right? So we had decided, let's get your mom and let's pick, as usual, one of the most expensive restaurants in town.
I don't know what's right or wrong anymore. I go through life now trying to be as cautious as possible, cognizant of my distance to other people. Who am I around that is in my bubble and is not? But we didn't decide to take my mom. My mom said, enough. I need to get out of here. Keep me as far away from everyone as possible. get the private room in the restaurant if we can. We did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to eat at one of my, her talking, favorite restaurants in town.
Exactly. And
which happens to be one of the most expensive restaurants in town.
Well, her and I have that in common.
Yes, y'all do.
Thankfully, it was a nice fat gift she gave her family to care of the into the day bill.
You whispered to me on my left-hand side, you might want to tell the kids kind of what the
budget management of this dinner
of ordering
is.
Here are. And I'm thinking immediately to myself, well, that's no fun. And then my mom, who didn't hear you, whispers in my right ear about 20 seconds later, loud enough for you to hear, this dinner's on me, by the way. And then you whispered in my ear, never mind, crisis averted. Luckily, we've raised the kids to where when we go to a more expensive restaurant, they know to skip the $30, $40 steak and go down to the $15 to $20 whatever else.
Some of them do. Some of them don't.
Good point.
You know, I think it's fair to say that families of kids that that go out to eat, you guys understand the idea of managing the table budget. And we have been since the very beginning of our conjoining of families, managing plates and saying, you can order this, you order this, y'all share this, da 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 da. But the older they get, you know, they're going to eat a whole plate of food.
Oh, yeah.
And they want to have the most delicious plate on the menu, just like we do. You're
making me think of the very beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And we would go out to eat breakfast, right? Uh-huh. And the way that would maybe work is I'm going to get the bacon, egg, and pancakes, and you're going to get the bacon, egg, and pancakes, and you're going to get the bacon, egg, and pancakes.
And we're all going to eat 3 bites of pancakes because we're full
of
bacon. Right,
and now there's 25 pancakes at the table. So we began kind of early saying, why don't we share things? You yeah. get your own bacon and eggs in mm-hmm. this example, but why don't you and I split the pancakes?
Mm-hmm.
And that has worked. But yeah. when you go to one of these types of restaurants and
on New Year's Eve,
it's Vietnam is the name of the restaurant where we live, but you can relate no matter where you live. The special occasion restaurant.
Yeah.
It's our anniversary. It's New Year's Eve. It's we're going to spend a little bit more money than we might on a normal weekday restaurant outing.
And in COVID times with an elderly person, you want to get into the places that are going to have the least amount of people in them.
Sure.
And the restaurants, the very expensive restaurants, are going to be the ones that have the least amount of people in
them. In our town, certainly.
Yes. Good point.
But maybe you can relate to this too. It's the restaurant I forget about. It's the restaurant when you and I are choosing to go out to eat, and it's just the two of us, and we know how to manage the menu so that we're not spending too much money.
Well, there's so many great Vietnamese restaurants in our town that
are at a
more
lower
affordable.
Price point. Yeah,
yeah,
you're
absolutely
right. But this is, like I said, a special occasion restaurant.
I'm glad that we went there, and I'm glad that we're getting to talk about this, because everything about that restaurant was what you would expect a nice restaurant to be, and for them to be catering to,
right.
A, it's New Year's Eve, B, you are the community of people in this town that will come out and pay high price for food, so we want to make sure you're happy when you're here. It's actually owned by a family that my children went to school with. And there's this cute little hostess that was kind of darting around the restaurant, dressed super cute. And I said at one point, oh my gosh, that girl, look, isn't she dressed so cute? And both of my kids go, Mom, that's Maddie Wynn. She graduated with Cortland. And I thought, oh, that's fine.
And
that's
her family's restaurant?
Yes.
I didn't realize you had such a close connection.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so then we get in there and we go over to the bar because we're waiting on you. And I don't want to sit until we get your mom there because I want to make sure that we get your mom in. We get her wheelchaired up to the table. We get it situated where she can have the most freedom. The timing was perfect. They had that alcove, the little private area, ready for us. And so I said, okay, Cortland, you and I, my 21-year-old son, let's go over to the bar and have a drink. I ordered a split of Prosecco and asked him, would you like me to get 2 glasses or would you like to order something else? And he ordered a beer from the bar. I mean, that was just I don't know. It's one of those things I hadn't done yet because the year had been so weird.
Yeah.
My son turned 21 and he was in College Station and I never even got to see him.
Right.
So that was a nice little treat. There's a theme to our New Year's Eve, by the way, and it includes alcohol, if anyone else has not noticed that yet. Anyways, we get over. So we get everyone situated. We get everyone there.
I would
there.
Say alcohol is one of many themes.
Sure. Family's a theme. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, they're kind of important.
Celebration of glorious foods is a theme.
Speaking of something to drink, you asked for coffee.
I did. We get everyone situated, sat down, and then our waitress Barbara comes over. She comes around and Hunter immediately says, I want the fried bread. This is your kids that have been eating at this Vietnam restaurant.
They've eaten there a few times. He took his girlfriend there for Valentine's Day pre-COVID.
Oh, that's right.
So he doesn't say, I want it. I think he's taking the temperature of what we're up to. Hey, can we get the fried broccoli?
Uh-huh.
And that's all my mom needs to hear. Yeah. No matter which kid says it, the answer tonight is always yes.
Yes. So I remember that the fried broccoli is amazing as well. And I know it's coming out and I'm looking at the appetizers. I'm starting to look at the menu there and I'm like, gosh, you know, I'm not sure I can eat the fried broccoli or a lot of
stuff. Breaded dishes.
Yeah. And so the waitress comes around. Her name is Barbara. And I said, hi. I said, could you give me a little bit of information about the breading or is there breading on the fried broccoli? And she said, yes. I said, could you tell me what kind of breading it is? She says, it's rice. And I say, okay, I have definitely issue with grain and I'm not certain about rice. I'm not ready to take that chance on New Year's Eve. So anything that you are bringing to me, could you please just let me know if there's going to be a concern about that? And she was fantastic. She was so kind and so thoughtful. And every single thing she brought out, she would say, okay, this has, and I and okay, the soup has rice in it. So I'm going to bring you a salad if that's okay. And I was like, yes. And then she comes out and says, now I put the dressing on the side. It's made of this, this, and this. And you know what? And this is exactly what we talked about when we talked about Bellino's and dietary concerns and the shift in restaurants that are going to be getting the most customers in them when people are having to pay attention to their health. Mm-hmm. This isn't a joke. I'm not playing around. I'm not on some kind of a freak diet. If I eat your food, I'm going to be sick on New Year's Eve if you don't let me know that there's something in it that could make me sick. Mm-hmm. And she was wonderful. And I told her, I said, well, we started asking about the recipes of this and that and all the different foods, which we're going to talk a little bit more about.
Yeah, once she acknowledged that she would answer some questions that a lot of restaurants...
They're trying to turn you over so fast, they don't care.
Well, and they don't know.
They don't know. That happens so often.
And in our city, they don't know because those kinds of questions are a minority thing, too.
I don't think they're a minority anymore, Joe.
Well, peanuts, certainly. Gluten, we know. But grain-free keto, not as a choice, but as, for you, a requirement. It's not something that I don't think the white staff in our town hear a lot of.
They just don't know enough about it. And people are scared to say what they need.
They don't want to look like a fool.
Right.
They know what the answer is going to be. They're not going to know. Well, right. I guess I'll ask, but they're probably not going to know. So once she became responsive to those things, we began asking her all kinds of questions about the recipe. How can I duplicate this at home, please?
Yes. And then, of course, I was like, you probably don't know this, but we do a podcast called Dinner Table Talks, and we are definitely going to talk about you. And she goes, oh, you know, like kind of funny.
What did you land on?
I ended up with, and I was very, very happy with it. I ended up with a traditional fish soup, which is made of pineapples, tomatoes, jalapenos, mint, bean sprouts, and then a spicy fish broth. The one I ordered was jumbo shrimp.
Mm.
And she brought me out chopsticks, and I had the little soup spoon thing, you know, to use, and the hot chili and all of that. And it was a delicious dish. I brought home my extras, going to eat some leftovers as well.
I get the hot pot there, and I felt like had been so long since I'd been there that there was no need to try something new. It's certainly served. I think it's made in these individual clay pots. Rice on the bottom, shrimp, scallops, calamari, mushroom, ginger, scallions, and like this garlicky soy sauce. It was phenomenal.
Lily had that too, and you got the seafood one, right?
I got the seafood one. Yeah. And so I remember it being more brothy and less ricey, and I would like for it to have been that way again. So when and if we go there again in the near future, I get that again, I may have to ask that question before we go.
And does it make you want to think about making Vietnamese food at home? Like, I'd love to make ramen for noodles I can eat.
Yeah, for you, it's just the noodles. I did look up after your plea for chicken and dumplings, a keto grain-free style of chicken and dumplings. And it's just like anything else. If you use the appropriate flours instead of these flours, we can totally do it.
Yes, I can't wait. That's going to be good.
So that was a huge success. That meal was fantastic. Everyone was pleased. Slow dining.
Slow to the point of like the kids were starting to go.
Oh,
like,
they started peeling off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which led to you and I alone at home on New Year's Eve. I mean, those kids scattered. They were gone.
And then, of course, this morning, as soon as I jumped up, I got on our little family thread and said, as soon as you see this, tell me you're alive. Well, I didn't say tell me you're alive, but I said, tell me good morning. So I know that everyone's okay. Everyone's okay. But we got to have a very, very nice little New Year's Eve alone, just the two of us. And
the trend really continues.
Yes, I really, really enjoyed it. The best part about it was, well, we won't talk about the best part about it. But the second best part about it was the Cocoa Bomb cocktails that we had.
It seems like one day, a couple weeks before Christmas, my Facebook feed, wait for it. Exploded. With people talking about Cocoa Bombs, a thing I had no idea what they were.
Me either. I had no idea. But after it just kept going on and on and on, I was like, well, I need a Cocoa Bomb.
I can really get behind this idea. Where do I find these Cocoa Bombs?
So our good friend who actually was in a Friends with Benefits episode.
Oh,
do you remember which episode? 18?
I don't remember.
Anyways, it's a Friends with Benefits episode.
When you go through our feed of old episodes, we put Friends with Benefits right there in the title at the very beginning. There are only three, so you're looking for the second one.
So this is a Friends with Benefits episode with Nicole Kanzerski and her mom, Alita. So Nicole shows up on our doorstep with a little four-pack of Cocoa Bombs that she had made with a little bottle of Irish cream down in the middle of it. And that little box sat there through Christmas, and you kept saying, when? And I said, it's coming, and I think it's going to be New Year's Eve. And boy, did we get a sweet cocoa cocktail on New Year's Eve.
You said, Joe, I want my Cocoa Bomb. And I knew that I had to heat up some milk. So there we go, whisking so it doesn't burn on the bottom.
Whisking the milk.
And at a lower heat. And the instructions were simple. Put your spherical, covered with chocolatey and
little peppermint and stars.
What do you call it? Jimmies?
Whatever. I don't know.
And inside your mug.
Of course, I put it inside my fancy mug with my brand on it. And then we did it in our J-Hack mug. So we had our two pretty little mugs there.
Pour your hot milk over it and the bomb will occur.
And so we poured it over and then it's this literal explosion of marshmallows that just opens up
that were hidden inside.
Yes. And then I noticed there was like all these little red flecks. So there must have been like some kind of peppermint, I think, inside there. She had sent us the Irish cream to make it a cocktail, but I went over and peeked in our liquor cabinet and I noticed that you had bought some little, what do you call those?
The airplane bottles.
Airplane bottles of peppermint schnapps. Like who knows when that was even purchased.
99 proof peppermint schnapps.
I'm also impressed that it was still there with as many teenagers as we have in our house.
Those would have been easy to abscond with when no one was looking. They avoid the scotch, interestingly, but they like the little, anyway.
So we tossed in a little bit of peppermint schnapps, and yes, we totally had a cocoa cocktail on New Year's Eve.
Amazing.
While we were trying to sit around a wet fire that really would not take off.
It was so cold outside. And
it was so cold, y'all.
It would have been perfect weather for a blazing fire, but it rained so hard the night before that all of the firewood was wet.
Everywhere,
I tried and tried and tried, but ultimately we said, let's just go inside. The heater's on.
Okay. But before we went inside, we took in, and I keep telling everybody, let freedom ring, man. We took in an entire city with every neighbor all around us shooting off fireworks.
I abstained.
I loved it so much.
I went to the fireworks stand to get my daughter some sparklers and little fun things to take over to her sleepover. I was eyeballing those mortars, man. The big tube, and you drop the thing, and it makes a...
People were doing it everywhere, across the street, next door, all over the place.
And we get a little bit, not a little bit, we get a lot of that every year.
Yes.
And everyone complains, especially if they have dogs. But this year, nah, man, I've been COVID bound for too long. I'm shooting off fireworks, and that's what's happening everyone in town said.
I'm going to take some freedom wherever I can. And this year, I'm taking my fireworks back.
So I went outside. I went outside in the front yard, and the neighbors across said, "Hey, Joe, what's up?" They got a little boy, and he was shooting off amazing fireworks right in the street across the street. And I sat out there and talked with him for a few minutes. I invited him back to the fire. I went back out and said, "Fire's a bust. Never mind. We'll have to enjoy that scotch around a fire some other time, and we will."
Indeed. It was a very, very lovely night, and I
it was a low-key night. I mean, Asen, if you think about what we just talked about, there wasn't a lot there. I mean, we went out to eat. We had a cocoa bomb, but those kids being in town...
I just love them so much.
And the feelings...
I just love them so much.
...that you and I have evolved about COVID and how we haven't really minded the shift. Mm-mm. And it's been exciting to see several of the shifts.
It's been a grieving year for everyone. Mm-hmm. Everyone. We had a death, a close death, your father. It was a challenging year, but it was also an eye-opening year. And in an eye-opening year, when you've got your four babes around you, there isn't anything more important. There isn't anything more important. And I hope that your New Year's Eve was as celebratory as you could possibly muster after a very challenging year. And that being said, it transitioned us beautifully into the morning that we're in today and our plans for our New Year's meal and all of the things you have to do to be lucky in 2021. Because you know what, Joe? Everyone that listens to this podcast will tell you that Aislinn loves black eyed peas.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow last year ended up in this weird situation where we didn't eat any black-eyed peas. Do you remember that?
No.
We didn't.
Okay.
We never ate black-eyed peas.
And that's why COVID happened?
I can't tell you a year that I haven't eaten black-eyed peas on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day.
So you've got your priorities set for today?
Oh my God, they have to. I'm eating black-eyed peas. And then also last night, my daughter told me that you have to wear red panties on New Year's Day. So uh-oh. I've also got my red panties on.
I don't have any red panties.
No. You don't have any red panties.
Do you have an extra pair?
I'll have to look.
But black-eyed peas are on the stove right now. I started off with bacon, slow cooked, trying to render out as much fat as possible. Then I added onion and garlic and jalapeno, softened it a little bit, put that in the pot with the black-eyed peas that you'd put away.
Yep. I grew, harvested, and stored my very own black-eyed peas.
Pull those out of the freezer. Pull some chicken broth out of the freezer. Put it all together, and you've got some great black-eyed peas coming.
So good. I can't wait. I hear another thing that's lucky is eating lots of greens, and I've got plenty of those right now. So mm-hmm. We're going to be making some Asian stir-fry greens.
Last week, we talked about doing that in the wok that you gave me for Christmas. Mm-hmm. Tonight, I'm going to do it in the wok that my son gave me for Christmas. So we're going to have a Asian wok-based feast full of lucky greens.
Got our fingers crossed and our toes crossed. We're eating black-eyed peas. We're wearing our red panties. We're doing all the grand things. I think pork is actually one of the things, too, that you're supposed to eat for luck. I don't know. So
there will be pork, of course, in the black-eyed peas.
Oh, yum, yum, yum. I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm really thankful to have been able to sit at the dinner table with you all for this amazing year that we have had. Amazing in all the ways you can explain amazing, good, bad, or indifferent. It's been an amazing year, and I've enjoyed spending it at the dinner table with you all. But before we close 2020 out and enter 2021, let's go to table topics.
What's the best and worst thing about your position in the family birth order? And you might need to explain what your position is in the family birth order.
I am the oldest of two.
Right.
And I am the sister of a sister and brother. Pair.
Of a brother that makes amazing Bloody Marys.
Truth. And lots of other things, too. What is challenging
about
it?
The best and worst thing about being the oldest of two when you were growing up, I suppose. Or even now.
I will tell you that I had hoped in my birthing that my birth order would be that I would have a son first and then a daughter. I'm not sure why I thought that, but as a young girl, the first of a family, I always had wished I had an older brother for some protection, mm-hmm. for some leadership, mm-hmm. you know, some of that kind of stuff.
An older brother can provide protection that a father cannot, in that because y'all are peers age-wise, mm-hmm. they're protecting you potentially at school and extracurricular in a way that any dad isn't down in the trenches with you.
Yeah, and in my mind, for whatever reason, that was something that I thought would be helpful. And I think it was, I mean, especially because my son, the oldest in the birth order, has been a great leader of our family, a great leader of our four kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has led the pack and he's done a very, very good job. And they're all independent in their own way, but he has led and he's done an amazing job. And so I think that that was probably the most challenging part, is being the leading kid, being not only the leading kid, but in our scenario with my kids and also my parents, they were young. We were young parents when the first child was born. And so there was a lot of growing up that was happening. So I think that that's a challenging part about being the oldest in the birth order, especially of young parents. I think being a female oldest in the birth order is challenging for everyone, the parents and the children as well. I certainly think there's a leadership in it. I certainly think there's a bravery in being the oldest.
Did you take that seriously growing up?
What?
The leadership role, or did you not understand or even recognize it until you became a parent? Or
yeah, I don't think I understood it. I now get it even more when my brother says things like, well, I thought you were going to head off to New York City and you were going to be the leading of the pack of the da-da, and then you stayed here in Corpus Christi, or you stayed home, or you stayed in Texas or whatever. But he told me the other day, I thought you were so cool. I did everything you did. And I was like, oh, good Lord. So it's a good thing Cortland was so cool, not that cool, but cool enough to lead in a little bit more...
Responsible?
Yes, okay. Exactly. So I think there's a lot of responsibility that is put on the first child, no matter male, female, older parents, younger parents. I think that's a part of it.
Birth order studies certainly dictate that. And there's always exemptions to every quote-unquote rule. But birth order studies show that the first of two or three usually acts and ends up like this. The youngest child is typically has a very different experience than the first one did because of the parents' relaxing stress and rules that they did at the top. Mm-hmm. I was an only child. I am an only child. And the best thing about it was that I was entitled and I got everything I wanted and I was spoiled and asking you shall receive. The worst part about it is that I was entitled and I was spoiled and I got everything I wanted and asking you shall receive, because that doesn't set you up maybe for a realistic lifestyle when those...
And you don't have to share.
You don't learn to share.
You don't learn
to negotiate. You don't learn. And all of that being said, that's no one's fault or problem, except that I can change things whenever I hope that I can change things as I become a parent. So for me, it was strictly known, don't care if how many we have, but I want more than one. Mm-hmm. Because I want to be able to instill in those kids everything I just listed. I also did that thing where I hoped that my first was a boy.
Yeah.
But I would have been really happy if it wasn't.
Right.
Of course. But that did happen.
Everyone says that, has to say that.
And I understand the has to say that, but there are desires that maybe we don't like to talk about out loud. I'll just say it out loud. I was hoping that the first one was a boy. Then I hoped that the second one was a girl.
Me too.
So that I could round out the set, so to speak. Yep. And once we had a boy and a girl, we decided, my ex-wife and I, that that's enough.
Yeah.
And it's funny how life works, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Because it was enough.
Right.
But blending us all together
has
been exponentially incredible.
I was manifesting those babies way before I should have been manifesting babies, by the way.
Clearly.
That's part of the reason why I had children so young. But I remember thinking to myself, I want a lot of kids. I want to be the hippie mom with a house full of kids who's running everywhere.
Christmas is a community gathering just based on the number of kids and grandkids and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, the whole experience of it. And when we got to two... And I, same thing, I got boy, wanted that, that's what I wanted, then girl, wanted that one. Oh, I wanted, I prayed and prayed and prayed, I pinked that girl, I manifested her in every way possible. Mm-hmm. I even always tell people that I believe she came to me in a dream when I was still pregnant with her and told me what her name was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So all of that being said, I imagined a life with a house full of teenagers. I imagined it. I knew it was there. And so when we blended our family, it was like, oh, yeah,
got it.
This is us. And we stopped after the second one with my ex-husband because my best friend was having her third and I was like, I don't I don't know that
I may not follow this one.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know about this. I'm not sure. And it wasn't about having a lot of kids. It was just about not sure that this was the right thing for the two of that couple, that our couple. And so when we blended our families, it was perfect. And it has been interesting because it has completely shifted the birth order and made a bit of a confusing mess for the birth order of our children. Mm-hmm. Because your daughter's the youngest when she's with her mom. Right?
Mm-hmm.
She's the youngest when she's here. Your son's the oldest when he's with his mom. My son's the oldest when he's with his dad. My daughter, however, became
the
confusing mess of she's not the baby of any household anymore, which she was the baby, and she was the crowned princess when she was the one of two, because my ex-husband had another baby, and they have a young sister. Mm-hmm. And in our household, she's the middle child. And boy, is she a middle child. That's Sweet Pea. She's actually everything that they describe when they describe the middle child. I love that about her. And you know, interestingly enough, Hunter somewhat became the middle child in our household. And he acts like a middle child. Maybe we should do some unanswered question on the birth order and what they say about that.
That sounds like fun.
My community.
What a fitting.
My family. Yeah. My people. My tribe.
The folks that are going to be around when other people come and go. They're going to be around forever. And so what a fitting New Year's Eve that we had, even if just for a fleeting idea of the six of us together. It's going to not only end the year that we've had in a very, very positive way, but a fantastic kickoff to what I know is going to be a well-intended year for not only you and I as a couple and a family, but even trickling down into dinner table talks.
For the entire planet. On that note,
Happy New Year!
From Aislinn and Joe, thank you for joining us every week at the dinner table. We'll see you next week. I want to share my magic with you.
Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Dinner Table Talks. We will be back next Monday with a fresh episode. In the meantime,
hit us up on social media, send us an email, DM us, whatever. We want to hear from you.
And we hope that you're enjoying the episodes as much as we enjoy creating them for you.